The official Danko Jones podcast is brought to you with the help of Blue Mic microphones and Skull Candy headphones. Check them out at bluemic.com and skullcandy.com. Well, me and Nick, when we did this podcast a few podcast episodes ago, we brought in a guest, and it was our friend Brendan Canning. We've known him for many years. Brendan plays in, maybe you've heard of them, Broken Social Scene. I lived with Brendan Canning for years and years, and so it was kind of a reunion, and we used the podcast just to host this reunion. We had a great time. So since we had such a great experience, me and Nick decided to bring in someone we didn't really know very well, but we admired their work, and that was stand-up comedian Nikki Payne. Nick knows Nikki a little better than I do. I was only a fan, and we brought her into this podcast, as you'll hear, and we got to know each other during the podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Nikki's a hilarious, hilarious person. You can check her out at nikkipayne.com, nikkipayne.com, and she's got a @NikkiPayne Twitter account as well, if you want to follow her after this podcast is over. And check her out. I'm sure she's got numerous YouTube clips as well, if you just want to figure out, put the face to the voice, or the voice to the face, or whatever. Anyways, here it is. The official Danko Jones podcast begins, and then now. If you've ever seen her perform, it's unlikely that you'll forget her, considering her exuberant style, her unrestrained content, and her trademark lisp. She's the winner of the Canadian Comedy Awards for Best New Stand-Up Newcomer and Best Female Stand-Up, the first ever person human to win both of these awards. She's made appearances in Last Comic Standing, Video on Trial, Buzz on My Right, and the NFB documentary The Next Big Thing as well. She's a member of the Boom Comedy Troupe and has appeared on the sketch comedy show Comedy Inc. for CTV. A graduate of the comedy program at Humber College, she's also a Second City Conservatory alumnus. She's a familiar face at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, and she's set to host an upcoming gala this weekend. Please welcome Nikki Payne.
Right. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I lifted that entire introduction from Gian Gomeshi.
Oh, Gian, my boyfriend.
I got that off the internet. I hope you didn't mind. And that was 6 months old. So everything's happened already. Sorry, Nikki.
That's all occurred.
His introductions, whenever, if you ever hear Gian Gomeshi on the CBC introduce a guest of his, they're awesome, so I figured I can't top it. I might as well just lift it.
There you go.
He's the most artful person to say and in between his sentences.
Yeah, when
ever.
He says it, I don't feel like he's just a hack.
No, it sounds like gossamer is coming out of his mouth.
So, Nikki, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, good. The introduction, I hope, was brought everyone up to speed with who you are and why are you here? Basically because I think you're damn funny, and I thought you'd be a great guest on our podcast. So you are our second guest ever on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Number two.
So what's going on?
I won another Canadian Comedy Award. You listed my record, the only human to have ever.
That's what
won.
Gian said. Gian said that, man. I didn't even say it.
Hear that. I have such a big crush on Gian Gomeshi that I don't hear anything. I don't even know if it's a crush. I don't know what it is, but he's one of those people that whenever he's in the room, I can't speak. I'm just like, Anyway, I won another Canadian Comedy Award. This time I won it for Best Taped Live Performance, and I won that last month. And I broke it about 2 minutes in, And it's here, and it snapped into two pieces.
It's really broken.
Very broken.
How it did
couldn't
it break?
Be more broken. I put it down to fix my dress for the official photo. Like, you know, when you win an award, you know, somebody usually grabs you and takes you backstage, and you're like...
I don't know what that is. I don't know that whole experience. Sorry.
That whole experience.
Me neither.
I have no idea.
It. Yeah.
And we're not even joking.
And you fix
it. Never won anything.
You've never won anything?
No. No.
Come on.
Nope. Never will, I don't think.
I got
even
it.
Especially with my mouth.
Well, I would have thought you would be like a multi-award winner.
No, when you get nominated, human. You get a sheet of paper.
Right.
And I give it to my mom. Because
right.
I know I'm not bringing home an award.
I framed the Gemini nomination because I'm pretty sure I'm never going to win a Gemini. So
wow.
I put the nomination sheet in frames.
I got a runner-up for a local comedian award from a magazine, Toronto, from Now Magazine.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Years ago.
Do they give you a plaque?
Because I think I got a sheet of paper, and I don't know where that sheet of paper is.
When you go to a restaurant or somewhere where it's the best of, according to Now Magazine, which is the Toronto Weekly, you get a plaque.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I won a coloring contest at Reitman's, and I won an Easter Bunny, a stuffed Easter Bunny.
Is this like last month?
That was in 1988.
Oh, okay.
That was your first award.
That was my first award.
And it's just been onwards and upwards ever since.
I think I broke that one too.
So what happened when they whisked you away?
They whisked me away to take the official photo, and I put it down on the floor to fix my dress. I heard a small clink sound, like it just sounded like that.
Right.
Nothing big. And the photographer went, and I looked down, and it was in two pieces.
Well, you know, if it was a Grammy, I would say, you know, get a new one. But because it's a comedy award and it's not taking anything away from it, to make it more comedic, I would wrap it in gaffer tape.
Yeah.
And just put it on your mantle.
It's more interesting now. Now I talk about it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have, if this didn't break, I wouldn't have brought it here today because
yeah.
I would have felt like I'm being an egomaniac. Like,
I think
look at my award.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it right here.
Now you have
table.
A buffer.
Now
you have a story that lets you bring an award.
You now have two doorstops.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it looks to me like a coaster as well because it's the glass part that's kind of laying
and
down.
And it's also, it makes you look cooler because it also actually gives the effect like you don't give a fuck. You just threw it on the floor.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
this
just
award.
Just another award.
Yeah.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
So what we were talking about before we started the podcast in a series of emails back and forth was, what are we going to talk about? Because we don't really know each other. We were introduced to each other because of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I sought you out because I wanted you on the podcast because I'm a fan and both Nick and I are fans and we wanted an interesting person on the podcast and someone that, you know, wouldn't really be outside, would be outside of the whole music genre.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I thought that there is an interesting thread is the fact that both comedians and rock bands or rock people, we go on tour. And
yes.
You have gone across Canada back and forth touring, I am assuming, many, many times.
Many, 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 many times.
Nick was telling me beforehand that you spent some time, you relocated to Los Angeles for a while.
I did for a while, yeah.
How long
were
you in L.A. for?
On and off, probably about 2 years. I mean, Canadians tend to go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'd be down there for a bit and then, you know, I'd come back
up
and do something. But,
was it working on a show there or a pilot?
I did Last Comic Standing while I was down there, which was cool. And I was auditioning for stuff and just doing that, I guess the listeners wouldn't understand that thing if they haven't done
mm-hmm.
that thing, but you go down, you work, you know, what it boils down to is you work really hard in Canada, save up a lot of your money, and then you go down to L.A. and you spend it all, and you spend
mm-hmm.
a lot of time going to auditions and almost getting there. Like, I went, I screen tested for two shows while I was there, and you get really, really close, and the contracts are signed, and you're quite literally, like, sitting in your car, in manager's car in
mm-hmm.
the drive in the parking lot of, like, the studio waiting to hear, and then you get the call that, like, it went with the other person that was sitting in the parking lot apartment.
There's right. three cars in the parking
and
lot.
And you can hear yeah. muffled, like, yeah. screams of,
yeah,
of joy.
Yeah, of joy, and you drive out of the parking lot. And,
it,
yeah.
It is harsh, isn't it?
It is
in
what
a weird
it is.
Way.
That's what
yeah.
you have to
so
do.
So harsh. And
like,
it, yeah. I mean, I there's a certain part of me that goes, well, you have to go through that. Good that you get, went through that. But going through that myself in, yeah. in a different genre, mm-hmm. It's hellish, man. And it'll play on just how you view things, and yeah. it'll leave you disillusioned.
Well,
because you have to devote all your energy and attention towards your career, and everybody else around you is devoting all their energy and, you know, and attention to your career, it becomes, you know, all, like, being an entertainer becomes so much more important than what it really should be,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it becomes everybody's hardcore
yeah.
focus,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, it just becomes, like, so important, and it's like, but I hump things for a living.
I was thinking about that recently. Actually, just today, I was thinking about how, you know, to people in entertainment, L.A. and New York are these meccas, right?
Right.
That's where everything happens. But, okay, arguably New York is that for several types, you know, politics and,
mm-hmm.
and commerce. There's an element of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not, you know, L.A. is not the center of the universe, really. You know?
But, you know, hearing you say that, you know, the contracts were signed, we were right there, you'd gotten to the nth audition,
mm-hmm.
and this was it, you were at the precipice of either, you know, just all it took was a phone call, and you're in, and
mm-hmm.
and you've set sail. It reminds me of how many times that's happened to us as a band, and now when things happen, when people say stuff to me, I go, I'm not going to believe it. Until I'm actually there, someone whispered in my ear, when we got the Guns N' Roses tour, someone whispered in my ear and said, so-and-so is trying to get you on, it's gonna happen in X amount of months and this. And I just said, well, that's never, I don't believe that
mm-hmm.
until I'm about to walk on stage for the first show.
Exactly.
And that's when I said.
Pragmatism's good though, I think.
Yeah. People tend to take a glimmer of hope and make it a reality in their heads. I remember this one time, and Nick, you and I brought it up a few podcasts ago about my crank phone calls.
Right.
I used to do these crank phone calls, and it got around in Toronto. Nobody knew who it was. Word had spread, but everybody wanted to know who it was. And someone told somebody else at an American record label that I did these things. The guy came down to Toronto. And this is just when the Jerky Boys had put out their first tape cassette. I say cassette because it's how old it was, but their first album.
Mm-hmm.
And that label, I'm not going to divulge what it was or who it was, that label wanted their own Jerky Boys. They wanted their own thing. And he'd heard like a couple of my phone calls and he was interested. So he said, well, meet me here at this club. And we met in Toronto. He was in Toronto. And we hung out. And we were just hanging out, and we'd go to this party or this club, and we'd just hang out. And he knew a lot of people in Toronto, and every single time he would introduce me to someone, he would say, this is so-and-so, he's gonna be our new signing, forget about the Jerky Boys, he's the guy. And I was sitting there, just like you were sitting there, with the contract sign going, oh my God, I'm gonna be on this label as the new Jerky Boy. I'm gonna be the one. And that happened to me for a night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, at one night, and this is before the band, this is before anything, I was a bored kid with nothing to do, and nothing happened. I got no phone call back, I got no reply back, it destroyed me.
Was this before email?
Well, yeah, that's why I'm saying phone calls. No email, no reply, no response, nothing.
No fax back?
No, nothing. No fax, no...
No mimeograph.
No carrier
nothing.
Pigeon.
Dying. Just no calls.
Nothing. And it crushed me.
No tin can phone
it
call.
It was the beginning of things like that. So
and how old were you when that happened?
I was 21, 22. Whenever the Jerky Boys, I can't remember. Whenever the Jerky Boys came out, the year, anybody can look up the Wikipedia of them. That was the year.
Right.
It was the year that the Jerky Boys, it was the year. And that, like, you know how bands, oh, something breaks. It happens in TV. Yeah. Well, now Lord of the Rings comes out, Twilight comes out, everybody's got something on vampires. So I was the Jerky Boy of this label that needed that Jerky Boys phone call fix.
But don't you find that, because what I find is that when I was younger, I would get caught up in all of that. Oh my God, I'm almost there. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be on my own sitcom. I'm gonna be a star. Yeah.
I'm gonna be on this label. It's gonna be amazing.
And it was so high and then so low. And and I find now that I'm starting to settle into that part of, well, this is part of the industry that I've chosen to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, well, you'll go one of two ways. You'll either, you know, grow into that and just go, okay, well, let's is how it is, and like you said, be much more calmer when people say, like, you know, you might be opening for Guns N' Roses on your tour. You're like, okay, great, that sounds wonderful. Let's see if it unfolds and actually happens that way. Or you go in another way where you just get so bitter after a while that it's like, because the fact is that this is just a fact of both our industries. And I think it's, I think you just decide, you know, what way you're going to sort of, you know, go and
things can fall apart with, like, one decision, one shift of schedule, anything, you know? But the opposite of that, I've noticed, can happen, too, where someone calls you up, you know, and says, we're going to use you for this, you know? We're going to use you for this. And you're like, okay. And then, and then when it does happen, you're almost not as present. You know what I mean? You're just like, this is happening,
sure, whatever.
You know, and
it happens after the fact. You're like, I just did that.
That was weird. Yeah, like,
holy smokes.
I'll never forget with our band, this thing that was
Brutal Nights.
With Brutal Nights, we went to Greece. We were opening for this band called Tragedy that was really popular with crust punks, like they're just like globally huge. They're almost like emblematic of a scene, this massive punk scene. And in Greece, in Athens, they'd actually somehow made it so there was an outdoor show on a college campus. And we go to the college campus, and the people at the campus were like, no, you can't have the show here, to the organizers. No, you can't have a show. The show's not going to happen here. This was maybe 3 or 4 months after the riots in Athens in 2009. And they just found another college campus where the riots had happened, actually. And we just converged on that. And they somehow put the word out that the show was going to be at this different college campus.
Wow.
Where, by the way, there's laws in Greece that the police cannot enter college campuses because of a coup that happened in the 1970s. And so we go to this college campus, and like 10,000 people come to come to this show and watch. Maybe not 10,000, but like a huge amount of people.
Can you?
Come on.
It just ruined your story, or you keep going.
But someone accepted my friend request. That was what just happened. I'm so excited.
Yay, you got another friend.
My point is, now,
turn off your phone when we do podcasts.
But, you know, I can't even process that we played to this huge amount of people, and there were police surrounding the college campus. You know, there was Molotov cocktail burns stored in the neighborhood. There was a guy on a moped during this show throwing firecrackers around. But it just feels like something that wasn't me, you know? It's just something you look back on and go, okay, that's very, very odd.
Well, that's what's cool about, you know, what it is that we do, you know, like arts and entertainment endeavors.
It's feast or famine,
that,
really.
Yeah,
that's
like,
exactly,
you have
it.
These incredible lows and these big disappointments, and being rejected is just part of how it is. But then you have these moments where you're doing things where you're like, this is my life.
Yeah.
Like, this is the life I chose. I'm doing pretty good. So, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, but the trick is that you have to be, you have to persevere through it all and be very, very tenacious with what you want to do and where you want to go. There's so many people that just give up after these kinds of disappointments. And I gave up after that night. I never really, maybe I did a few more crank phone calls, but after that I stopped. I was so deflated.
Yeah.
And that was the end of my crank call career.
You gotta get on that phone and you gotta start calling people and calling them.
It was a lot easier back in the day before call display. There was one where I had a talking cat and I'd call vet places and then I go, I swear to God, he was talking. And then you want to hear him? And the person, if they were game, they go, yeah, let me hear this talking cat. So I go, hold on. And I just muffle the phone a bit, make some muffling noises. And then I'd go, hello, my name is... And then and they would either find it funny or hang up on me. And the people that found it funny, you know, the crank phone call would go on and on. And I had this whole story and this backstory and stuff like that. But then I'd do other phone calls just for myself, not to release to anybody, which were these really quick, stupid phone calls that I actually found more joy in. When I'd call up, I'd look in the white pages, look under Priest, call up everybody named Priest. And I remember this one, there's this old woman who answered the phone. I go, is this Priest? And she goes, yes. I go, you guys fucking rock. I saw you in 82. Fucking rock. Yeah. And then, you know, you'd probably get, or Presley's in the white pages.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was your long lost cousin. And what? Then you just get a hang up. But I was the only one who found it funny. Those are just for me, though. Nobody heard those. But I have.
Thank you for giving them to us now.
Yeah. Well, I figure.
The world needs statute of limitations.
They're old phone calls that even the people I call wouldn't remember them. And I have hours and hours of it logged somewhere that need to be digitized. But yeah. But I almost
did you ever do prank phone calls, Nikki?
I'm terrible at them. I have a pretty distinctive voice, so I would,
is this Nikki Payne?
Yeah, so as a kid, I guess I could call people that I didn't know, in the phone book, right? But, yeah. I remember calling up my best friend outside time during a prank phone call, and her mom was like, Nicole? And I was like, because at the time, at 8 years old, I didn't realize that my voice sounded completely different than everybody else's in my town.
You'd be like, hi, this is the chief of police.
And your daughter's in a lot of trouble. I'm a grown man.
So that would be a great CD. And do it to your friends. Crank call your friends. Yeah. So at the punchline is, Nikki.
Nikki, what do you want?
And then just click.
Click.
Every call is click.
Every click ends with...
There's never been a crank call where they get caught. You should do that.
But I always get caught. Is this any pain? Click.
You should totally do
I've
that.
Definitely done a lot of failed crank calls. I was not... When I was a teenager, I did a couple, but generally it didn't work. Calling a guy called the math magician who was a tutor, asking him to play a children's party, and then also calling a bricklayer and saying, I'm having problems with my wife right now. I need you to divide our house in half.
That's a great
brick
one.
Up the house.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that one was good. But besides those two, it was all just running out of steam. Hey, is this the pizza guy? Can I get some tacos? That was another one.
I love those ones, man. I love those ones. The internet, when it was in its infancy in terms of file sharing, people were uploading crank phone calls, just random ones, and there was a lot of those really shitty, amateurish ones that people just uploaded on their own, and I have a bunch of them. They're hilarious. I think the more amateur the crank phone call, the more I find fun in it. It's the ones that are really elaborate that you kind of go, well, yeah, put some time into it, okay. But I love the ones that are just, there's one that's on the internet, some guy just calls a donut shop called Mama's Donuts. Yo, it's Mama's Donuts. And it's this Chinese woman on the other line going, yes. Yo, oh yeah, I want some donuts, man. I want a jelly donut. And it's just, there's no punchline. He's just making it up as a good. It's the funniest thing ever. All he does is make a big order of donuts and call it a crank phone call.
Last Comic Standing in terms of getting recognition from it, because that's something I always hear is that it does up people's getting recognized and stuff.
I went to Ireland when it started to air. I was in Ireland, and at the time, everybody was on MySpace. That's how far back I was in LA.
Like 13 months ago.
Yes. Yeah. And everybody's on MySpace, and I wasn't checking it regularly. I was touring in Ireland, and so I went to like an internet cafe and checked it, and I had something like 500 friend requests, and like, what? And I really thought prank. I thought, oh god, somebody's like infiltrated my MySpace.
Someone has invented a new version of prank calls using the internet.
And it was the equivalent of a bunch of pizzas being delivered to my MySpace, and I didn't know any of the people. And then, I started to read the comments, and we love you on Last Comic Standing, and that's when I realized that, oh, this that little contest that I entered in LA has done something for me. And yeah, so it's definitely helped exposure wise. Totally.
Did you wait in line for it, or did you get it sort of set up, the audition set up through management?
I got an audition set up through management.
Yeah, that seems like the only way to actually get on the show.
Well, there's right? an open
I think
cattle
if
call
you're
as
in
well.
A lineup, you better be good and crazy.
Yeah.
I think if you're gonna be in a lineup, then you gotta be super wacky.
But I appreciate about Last Comic Standing, especially as it kept going on. I'm not sure which season you were in, the third one, second one. It wasn't
can't
the first,
remember.
But
I had never seen this.
It was
show.
Some time ago. Yeah. I don't really watch it very often either, because it's just such an awkward concept for me to wrap my head around that I appreciate what's going on with it. But anyway, the cool thing about comedy is you can't be a brand new person just trying comedy for the first time. And get on that show with any amount of ease, really. I mean, does that happen on it?
I mean, I don't know. I don't watch the show.
There's lots of veterans who've been on it.
I don't think I've seen an entire episode. I don't know why. I've never watched it. I've never watched it.
Yeah. It's not a great feeling watching shows that you've been on either. It can be a weird thing.
It's
right?
a bit weird. Yeah. And so, I really don't know. I mean, it seemed like everybody that was around me had at least some experience, but there was a couple. There were a couple that went pretty far too. That at least their storyline was saying that they were fairly new to it. I mean, whether or not that's true or not, I have no idea. But
I mean, with the reset button that works in LA and New York, in terms of you don't really count sometimes until you go there, like your career almost begins again. I think some depending on the momentum when you get in there, but. It's who knows how long someone was doing it in like Sheboygan.
I mean, I'm sure I came across as a newcomer because they didn't even put me down as a Canadian. When I was on it, it said Nikki Payne from Los Angeles. So
that's funny.
Are you serious?
That's probably better.
Been there a few months, apparently I was a long time resident.
Yeah.
Wow. And everybody back home was like, what a sellout.
What?
Sold us out.
I heard Opie and Anthony. I heard the Opie and Anthony clip.
You were on Opie and Anthony?
Well, where they talked about you. Did you ever hear that?
Was I on Opie and Anthony? Oh my god, did they hate me?
No.
Okay.
I feel awkward now because I thought you would have heard it before, but it was basically they had a deaf comedian. It was all female comics.
Uh-huh.
They had one comedian lady who is not
Hearing?
What? No, they had a not-appearing lady, they had Nikki, and they had just, like, another lady who... The first lady they had, they were just talking about how hot she was. The deaf lady, they hated. But it was, like, she was an 80s comic, so it was just they were more picking on how, like, hack the premises were.
80s,
and then when you go up there, when they cut to you, I don't remember whether it was Last Comic Standing or Comedy Now, Winnipeg, whatever the clip was, they were like, oh, she's really owning what... she's got going on, like your voice and all that stuff, and they were actually really complimentary to you. It was like three comedians. Yeah, they were like, when it first started, they were like, what the? And then they would get really great about you going into
good,
it. So
good.
I thought that was cool. Yeah.
No, I had no idea at all.
But you are relocating to the East Coast. We've been talking about how you moved to LA, but Nikki, you're going farther than LA and Toronto combined. You are going on the East Coast, in the Maritimes. You're living in Nova Scotia.
This could be the end of my career.
In 5 days.
This could be like the worst decision of my life. I'm trying something really weird and it'll probably end up blowing up in my face.
No.
But I've always wanted to live and do what I do back in the Maritimes. And it was never something that I felt that I could do. But I have, you know, I seem to have enough of a following that, you know, that I'm really flying into cities now and doing shows and then leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily have to be right here in Toronto. And it seems like most of my work, you know, booking and everything seems to happen on the interweb now. And so it seems like as long as I have an internet connection and an airport, I could probably live wherever I want to and tour and do comedy.
And rack up some sweet air miles.
Yeah, and I could be totally wrong. So what I'm doing is I'm just putting my stuff in storage here. I'm not committing 100% to going. And I'm renting a little place on the ocean for the winter because winter will give me a really good sense of what it's like to live out in the middle of nowhere for months on end because I want to be in the country by the water. And I'm going to give it a try for 6 months, and if it works, then I'll stay. If it doesn't, then I'll just come back.
As a city kid, what you're about to do baffles me.
It's baffling a lot of my friends. They're being supportive. They're like, great, we're glad that you're following your dreams.
Your dream?
How will you get food?
Yeah, exactly. That would be my first question, too.
Is there a plate store within 300 miles?
Plate store?
You can get some cutlery. You can just be eating with your hands.
So
what will you do when the ground freezes and you can no longer dig turnips out of it?
The ground eating tulip bulbs.
Yeah.
So I'm making them feel a little bit better by saying, I'm leaving all my stuff here.
Yeah.
I'll be back. You know, it might not work out.
It's good for material. I'm sure you can
if
mine
nothing
that.
Else, I'll have some great stories to tell about.
And time to write also.
Yes.
Lots of time to write.
Lots of time to write because there won't be any.
In solitude, six months in solitude, writing will come up with some crazy shit, I'm sure.
Maritimes is different. Like, you're in a country, but you're usually not too far of a drive from, like, an actual town.
Yeah.
Like, stuff.
It's an interesting thing, because listening to you do this, it's a world away from me. I don't know if I've ever really fully divulged this as we've been doing the podcast, but I like to stay inside. I don't like to go out. The outdoors not only scare me, but they almost offend me. I've never gone camping.
Right.
I've got ample opportunities. Friends have offered, you know, let's go camping. Never took them up on it. As a kid, was never interested in camping. Never, ever. While we're on tour, there's always the opportunity to go sailing with so-and-so and go to the beach here if we're going to be staying. We're 5 minutes from the beach. The other guys are interested in it. I would like to just get online. If I can get online in a hotel room, I'm a happy camper.
I'm one of those people that I don't go out much. And when I do go out, I like to, you know in advance so that I can have a nap in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You're worse than me.
I did a gap and then I can do it and then I enjoy it. Like last night we were at Eaton House and I actually stayed and I danced with my friends and we had a good time and it was silly fun. But I knew I was doing that, so I had a nap in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I prepared myself for being social with other humans.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't just do it on a whim of like, and I can't do it every night. I'm like, I really like my solitude, but then when I'm around people, I really want to be around them and I really enjoy them and I'm a lot of fun. But if I have to be around people like all the time,
mm-hmm.
I'm not nearly as much fun.
Yeah.
I think that's a commonality amongst people who have to be extroverts for a living.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working at a bank and you're the funny guy on staff, then you're more outgoing. But when it becomes your job, and you do this night after night, I find that I go into my shell even more so than before in the band, before the band was even around. I was that way before, right. But now I'm even more so.
But, yeah. I mean, when you're doing that travel, it's just so weird because you're doing the... I mean, in the case of a band, you've got this group travel. So that's already people that you have to be around. And that's good, but there's no way you don't get a little bit needing space.
What becomes very important is that you surround yourself with people in your touring entourage that you get along with.
Yeah.
And the moment there's even one, even if you're traveling with 8 or 9 guys... and there's just this one guy who rubs you the wrong way, it can ruin the whole tour for you.
Yeah.
You know, because you are in such tight quarters around each other, it's an element that can't be avoided.
Yeah, something that you could, you know, ignore or deal with if you were just dealing with him from 9 to 5 every day. Yeah, you suddenly is magnified because you're with them 24/7, and
the smallest thing,
or there's no weekend argument. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you're just waking up and you're like, oh, I know I'm gonna see them at the venue the next day. They're gonna eat.
And they're gonna eat
food.
That way.
You're gonna eat that way.
Yeah, you're gonna
fucking
make that
chooses
snack
food.
Eating sound
yeah.
When they eat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've done shared hotel rooms all the time with the band stuff, and like the snoring situation, it's amazing. That's the only time you feel I feel capable of like assault and stuff is like night distraction.
Yep.
You know, like it's crazy.
I'm not gonna get into names or anything, but there was one person that we were traveling with. And
was it Phil Lesh?
No.
And the Grateful Dead?
No.
Just putting that out there.
Just to clarify, we've never, ever been anywhere near 100-mile radius of the Grateful Dead while on tour. But I'll throw JC. JC right. said to me, have you ever watched so-and-so eat? And I go, no, I'm too busy eating my own food and involved in the conversation to watch him eat. So he goes, next time we eat together, watch him eat. So I did. And I couldn't function. I couldn't look at him after that. I couldn't watch him. I was just engrossed with watching this guy, how he held his cutlery, how he ate, how he chewed his food on one side and how his lips moved. I couldn't take my eyes off him. And at the same time, I was disgusted by it and I had to say something. And it was every fucking day. Well, we skipped breakfast, but two, at least once, maybe twice a day, I had to sit at a table with this guy and watch him eat. And it got to be this bit. It got so big that we would have discussions after the meal about him
post-eat.
Just eating. Like, how the fuck was he raised by wolves? Like, how do you eat like that? Like, it's just like this. And it was just this guy that we used to tour with.
And now he's gone.
I'm about to go on a tour in a few days, and I don't want to enter the touring entourage going, or everybody going, was that me? Was that me? Were you talking about me?
Right.
No. You know, it's someone who used to tour with us. But now that I'm home and I'm relaxed and I'm away from the touring and the bodies on top of bodies, it just feels like such a petty thing to dwell upon. But that's what happens. Everything gets really magnified when you're constantly around the same people. And that's something that nobody really understands. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about because no one else understands it.
Yeah.
And you feel stupid and petty and small when you bring it up to other people. I've brought it up to people going, I can't stand it. The way he puts on his hat and the jacket, and they're just staring at me like I'm insane.
Yeah.
So I've just learned to just deal with it.
Because you are. I mean, to have that, the truth of that is it is a little insane to let something like that get to you, but it does.
It does. And yeah. I used to get really mad at myself for you know, coming down on someone or really dwelling on these thoughts when there's a million other things you could be thinking about that are positive. And it just kept recurring and into my brain going, don't look at how he puts on his shoes. Don't. Oh, look at this. Look at this.
Doing it again.
What is he? He's an animal. The guy's an animal. You know, just things like that would just, oh my God.
No, I can totally relate. I was on tour with someone one time, and it was a long tour, and this comedian really wanted a specific type of phone card. And every convenience store and every cab, can we pull over here? I want to see if they have the phone card I want. And we go in, and that phone card wasn't there, and it never ended. Like, and again, I feel really petty talking about it. It's just a phone card just pulling over to a convenience store. But I'm talking every convenience store in every small little town that we drove in, and never, not once did that comedian ever find the fucking phone card that they were looking for. And finally one day I did, I melted down. I was like, your phone card doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because we've been to a million convenience stores and they don't have a phone. You're making it up. This phone card doesn't exist.
We can really, at this point in time, I can size up somebody within the first couple of days whether I'm going to get along with them in the long run or not.
Comedians traveling together must be especially weird because, you know, if you're traveling in the circuit, like with club comics just going on a package tour together, they can be so wildly different as people. And most of the time you're sharing a car for, you know, to save money.
That's what I hear. Like, when comedians tour, it's always like, yeah, we were in a car together.
Yeah, you get a rental and you split it.
Or a bus or anything.
Well, because there's two or three of you, you know?
And
just
there's no
isn't,
gear.
Yeah, right. When you're staying in hotels, you're not sleeping on a tour bus, you know?
Yeah.
So, I picture, like, you know, so like a 60-year-old guy and then, like, a 20-year-old with a nose ring, and then some lady.
It happens sometimes.
Really?
Like,
that's amazing.
I mean, as you go on further, sometimes you have a little bit more say of, like, well, no, I'm not traveling with that person.
The guy with the nose ring.
I'm not traveling with the guy who wants to do coke.
No, normally it's a 60-year-old guy.
Yeah, of course.
For me, it's just like, not that I'm ageist or anything, like, 60-year-old guys are great, but some of the 60-year-old guys in comedy.
He just shits and shits.
They must be so set in their ways. I just picture them having these routines and rituals. And that's what drives you crazy. Like, that's what we're getting down to, is when you're watching someone's ritual, it just, first of all, it's like, come on, why are you doing this highly personal thing with me right in your face, watching how your brain works, you know? I'm not a psychiatrist, you know?
Yeah.
And over the years, I'm sensitive to how other people would view me. Mm-hmm. So I don't try to bring on the road my little eccentricities that I have at home.
Oh, but they're doing something and someone is judging that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know someone's judging me all the time, going, I can't
believe we're doing that.
He sleeps right now.
Have you seen him drink this water? Have you seen it?
Have you watched him go online? Have you seen him when he goes to a hotel room? The first thing he does, he asks for the Wi-Fi. And then
he wears socks and shoes to the beach.
He blinks, like, every few seconds. It drives me nuts. He's blinking.
I've seen him surfing porn while sound checking.
That actually has happened.
Yeah. I swear to God, if he wears sneakers to the beach one more time, I'm going to kill him. Because you go to the beach on tour so often.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, we're at the beach every week.
He's been reading that High and Lowest Treasury for the last 3 months.
High and Lowest Treasury.
Saying the subway's slow. Subway's slow, man. That's why me. Also, time-wise, bad.
I believe Nikki more than I believe you.
The subway was a mess today, I must say. The subway was a bit of a mess.
You should try the patties, though. The patties.
So you had time to have a patty?
Well, yeah.
That marks it for me, actually. When I think of patties, I only think of the Toronto subway system.
Where you eat a patty.
The ones with the red dot.
Yeah.
Because those are the vegetarian ones.
Yeah. The vegetarian patties are the better ones. Yeah. And
they're better tasting.
This is going to get so interesting in its specificity, but honestly, the best Jamaican patties on the Toronto subway system, if you got a chance, Bloor Young.
Really? Yeah, hands down. Yeah. They are very good. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Bathurst.
No. Those ones are too crispy.
Bathurst and Warden.
Warden's probably good because locationally, you know.
Yeah, it's
got to
be the right combination of flaky and smushy.
Well,
for me, I prefer
flaky as well. But the truth is that there's two types of Jamaican patties that you can either get ones that are like yellow.
Jewish guy.
Yes, sorry. Dem truth be de patty. You don't want me.
You don't. Mountain woman.
This lady from Nova Scotia has some views. This is how you're making the patty.
That is something I'm going to miss.
You're digging your own hole here. I'm off.
Is the Jamaican patty.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll have to make them myself.
I'm sorry about my probably culturally insensitive attempted Jamaican voice I'm making, but just I'm doing an impression of when white guys speak patois, you know, so it's okay.
Right.
Cool.
But flaky and soft is the kind I liked. I like lardy basically and flaky and soft versus the ones that are like yellow and crispy. Those are okay, but they're not my
favorite. Most people listening are thinking, get back to the Jamaican accent.
Kuma Toronto, eat him the downstairs party.
I'm leaving this in, man.
Please.
I love that you have to see the big grin on his face while he's doing it. Yeah,
please know that I am happily throwing myself in a grave. Woo! Throwing myself off the Titanic into the icy shores. Not that this podcast is the Titanic at all, but...
Well, often at times...
I'm the iceberg of this Titanic of a podcast.
We hit a flaky, smushy iceberg, and it all went down.
Nikki, how much less funny was I last night compared to the show today? People hate hecklers. Like, the audience hates hecklers a lot of the time, if it's a good audience. You know what I mean? Like, right. If somebody pops out... and interrupts the flow of the show, nobody's happy, but then if you say something too crazy, there's like, they're just like, what are you doing?
Ooh.
You get the hecklers?
I don't get loads of hecklers, but I find, for me, going overboard, it works because, like, I'm a little lady, and, you know, so saying, you know, something horrible, like,
it's almost like a shield.
Your head and shake down your neck, you know, they're like, ah! It doesn't matter if you meant it or not, you know. So I find when you're hobbity, you can get away with overreactions because it's funny.
Well, I think that that's a great thing about your act, though, is just how disarming so many different choices that you make up there are for the crowd, you know? And that's like, it's not easy doing that, and you know? So that's my
thank you.
You're welcome.
How are we gonna end?
We could just compliment with compliments for each other now.
We just stroke one another.
Yeah.
Make each other feel good.
And Danko, what I really like about your act.
That's the opposite of how I work.
Okay.
No compliments, please.
Okay. Well, what I really hate about your act is...
I'm interested now.
Were you excited when Danko Jones, the rock musician, contacted you to get on the podcast?
I was totally excited. I'm not even lying. There's no stroking here or anything.
It came from left field.
I was like, Danko Jones wants me on his podcast.
That's cool.
And your friend was like, who is he again? I got that 2 days ago. But, God, I don't know if that's the right way to end it.
I think this is it. I think we've ended it. It's over.
I like us discussing the ending as being the ending.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That's
very meta.
Meta. Meta's the thing.
Wow, I think that's the only time I've ever used the word meta in a sentence. That's how we end.
Yeah.